Hey guys, thanks for joining us for this fourth episode in season four of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. Special guest on this episode includes singer-songwriter Orlando Mendez. He was a top 20 contestant from season 22 of The Voice. He has a new single we'll be talking about called Heart on the Line. We'll also talk with music legend Pat Boone. We'll talk about his 70 years in the industry, plus a new album called Country Jubilee, including new singles Grits and his rendition of You and I with Crystal Gayle. Of course, if you would, please take the time to subscribe, comment, leave some feedback, and share with your friends. Now, GPS in our cars and on our phones has completely changed the way we navigate, seemingly for the better. But not everyone agrees. A new poll asked people about GPS and safety, and 8% of people say drivers would be safest if they never use GPS. 23% say the opposite, that drivers would be the safest if they followed GPS all the time. Now, 50% of people said it should be a blend, following GPS for some, but not all directions. Now, there's a big difference based on age. For young adults in their 20s, 36% say that always using GPS is safer. That percent just drops to just 12% of people 65 and older. Another 12% of folks say that it's safer to never use GPS compared to just 5% of young adults. Our next guest, as I mentioned to him before, one of the probably first guests that I have not had on from the Voice in recent years. We've had several of the guests over the years. Excited, though. We're going to make up for it today. Orlando Mendez is his name. And Orlando, first off, privileged to visit with you, man, and excited about this new single to talk about.
Man, I'm glad to be on here, Cam. I'm glad to make up for some missed time and just kind of talk about this music a little bit.
Yeah, and Orlando, since it's our first visit, I like to let our listeners and our viewers and all that stuff let them know a little bit about you. If they don't know you from The Voice, tell us a little bit where music originated. What do you remember life without music in your life?
Yeah, so I don't remember much without music, but I grew up in Miami, Florida. I'm second generation Cuban American. My grandparents came over from Cuba after the Castro regime took over. They were forced to leave and kind of try to make a better life for themselves and for their children. Eventually made their way to Puerto Rico and then to Miami. And so that's where I was born and raised. I grew up actually around a ton of music. And actually my dad listened to a lot of alternative rock. So that's kind of what I listened to, the soundtrack of my early life, if you would say. So it was a mix between, you know, Latin music and alternative rock. And then around middle school, I found country music. It actually was Darius Rucker who got me into country music for the first time. And I remember I used to listen to Hootie and the Blowfish. My dad was a big fan. Right. And one day I heard a Darius Rucker song on the radio, one of his country songs. And I said, man, this voice sounds familiar to me. And it just happened to be Hootie from Hootie and the Blowfish. And so that was an easy connection point for me. Spent my life there in Miami and then made my way up to Gainesville for college. And then I've been here in Nashville, Tennessee for about a year now pursuing music up here.
Now tell us what The Voice taught you walking away from your weeks on The Voice. What was the biggest tidbit that you got from that?
Man, I think it was just to kind of what they used to preach to us was just embrace your star power, you know, embrace that feeling that you get on stage. I love live performance and there's nothing like it. You know, you're on that stage and there's a certain energy that kind of surges through you. And so they just kind of explained to us, you got to embrace that. You got to embrace who you are as an artist and just represent yourself well. Mm.
You know, we all dealt with 2020. How did 2020 affect you as an artist, as a creator? Did it maybe slow you down? Did it maybe inspire you a little bit more than years past?
Man, 2020, I know it was a tough year for a lot, for the globe. But actually, 2020 taught me a lot, and it inspired me. It's when I first picked up the guitar over that lockdown, over quarantine. Had nothing to do all the time in the world. I was like, it's finally time to learn how to play this thing, and taught myself in my room how to play guitar, and it's been game changing for me.
Now, for you, songwriting, where do you delve for the inspiration on a songwrite, and how important is it the co-write to be just right for you as well?
Yeah, so I've actually done a lot of solo writing. Many of the singles I've released, I've written by myself. Mm-hmm. It just started that way for me. You know, I used to write a lot of poems and stuff, and I always try to tell a story. It always comes from personal experience in one way or another, and try to connect it back to my life. A lot of it's been heartbreak songs, but now I hope for some happy songs coming up. And as I get into these co-writes, there's several I have set up here in Nashville. I think it's just, yeah, the vibe of the co-write, the vibe of the room. You know, if it's a good energy flowing back and forth, then you're going to get a great song.
Carrying the moniker of the Cuban cowboy for you, does that yeah. add a little pressure on you, or does it maybe solidify the home team, if you will, the fan base, if you will?
Well, I think it does both. You know, there definitely is a pressure to represent for my fans of a different background, mm-hmm. coming into country music, maybe Hispanic background or Cuban background, if you want to be more specific. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I feel like I have to carry that weight, but it's an honor and it's a privilege, and I think it really does establish my history and who I am.
And talking about the diversity in country music today, as opposed to, well, my generation and my dad's generation, the diversity was right. non-existent. And to see so many different races, so many types of country music, how cool is it to be yeah. involved in a day and age of music like that?
Well, I think it's beautiful, man. I really think it's beautiful. I think that the genre as a whole is growing. Mm-hmm. You're getting richer sounds in there, you know, richer backgrounds and histories. My grandparents were Cuban cowboys. They were Cuban farmers and ranchers and, you know, just from a different country. And so country music is so much more than just one specific region. You know, it's I feel like it could be worldwide. And you're starting to see that now with all these different artists with rich histories coming in and kind of putting their touch on it.
Now, who were the earliest country country memories that you have, the early country artists maybe that you heard from your grandparents?
My grandparents would listen to a lot of Cuban music, and actually so they're called guajiros, which is Cuban cowboys, and they made country music as well back in Cuba. So there's a few of them. I mean, they used to listen to Benny More. There's another guy, I know I wrote it down the other day, that they would listen to a lot, but these were, you know, Cuban cowboys. And then I found country music, and my early inspirations were Darius Rucker and Blake Shelton, as funny as that sounds, because I got to meet him later. But Billy Currington, Dirks Bentley, you know, Tim McGraw, huge for me. These guys who were game changers in my development.
Now, on the stage that day, as you had the four chair turn, what was the thought process on choosing the coach, and how many days have you really relived that moment since?
Oh God, a lot. Honestly, I take myself back to that moment all the time, whether I want to or not. It was a special, special moment, and it was the hardest decision I've ever made. That's the truth. You know, I had the honor and the blessing to have four chairs turned around for me, and four coaches wanted to work with me, and so I was overwhelmed for sure, just taking it all in. And the decision just came down to, you know, how hard Camilla fought to have me on her team, and felt it might be a right fit.
What is the biggest trigger for a memory from stepping on that stage? Is it a sight? Is it a sound? Is it a smell? Is it what reminds you of the voice stage?
I think it's a sight. I remember, you know, lights obviously in my eyes, in my face. And not much more than that during the performance. I mean, it was just kind of a blackout moment, you know, where you just get overloaded. And I remember that. So sometimes when I have those bright lights on me again on the stage, I'm kind of taken back there.
In that moment, how did you get past all of the butterflies, all the nerves, and get into the moment? I can't even imagine on that type of a stage to get through that.
Yeah, I mean, it was exhilarating, you know, and definitely the butterflies were flying around. I was breathing, you know, I was just trying to breathe through it and tell myself, listen, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity. You don't know if you'll get the chance to do something like this again. So don't let nerves ruin it. You know, this is our one shot. Just breathe through it and let's do what we were born to do. You know,
tell us about the new single and where this one came for you. Heart on the Line. I've been checking it out this morning, digging it. And I want to know where that one came from for you.
Yeah, it was written after I came off the show at a vulnerable point, you know, just coming a little short of where I wanted to on the show and, you know, kind of going through some other things in life. And I was at a vulnerable point and just sat down one night. It came to me all at once and in 30 minutes or less, the whole thing. And I think those are the most magical songs, the ones that just flow from the heart.
Mm-hmm. How has the fan reaction, the fan base changed since being on the show, and how has that kept you motivated and determined to keep on this road, if you will?
Well, it's just grown, and mm-hmm. it's been so encouraging. You know, the voice did a lot for my fan base. It gave me a big spike in notoriety. But actually coming off the show, it's been encouraging to just see that fan base grow and one person turn into two, turn into three, the slow build, you know, that's beautiful in an artist's journey. And so I'm encouraged every day as that fan base grows.
Talk about Nashville, now living in Nashville after the move. How important is Nashville and just the Nashville scene to your growth as a songwriter and a performer?
Oh, it's huge. I mean, I'm in the capital of country music. I'm in the hub now and just feeling connected to all of these incredible artists, writers, producers, executives who are in this town and who are the backbone of this town. I feel just more connected to my craft, man. I feel like I'm where I need to be.
Speaking of that, the upcoming EP, can you tell our listeners an update timing-wise when we can look for that one dropping?
Definitely. So, I mean, we're looking at probably late November, it's looking like now, but there'll be a ton of marketing and promo that goes behind it. I'm very excited for it. It's kind of my establishing project, and I'm just excited for everyone to hear my a piece of me out there in that EP.
That's where I am right now. And of course, Orlando, always want to make sure and let our listeners and all them know about where to find the music. Find the upcoming dates, merch, all of that stuff, socials. Where's the best place to keep up with everything, brother?
Absolutely. So if you check out online, OrlandoMendezMusic.com, also Spotify, Apple Music, everywhere you listen to music, you can just look up my name, Orlando Mendez, and on Instagram, Orlando J. Mendez Music.
There you go. Well, Orlando, it is, it's been a privilege to visit with you today, brother. I'm glad we were able to make up for what we missed out last season, brother.
Absolutely, man. This is a pleasure. Hope to be on with you again soon, Cam. This is awesome.
All right. Well, Orlando, man, have a great rest of your week. And like you said, let's talk again real soon, brother.
For sure, man. God bless you, brother.
Now, this guy needs to get work on weighing the pros and cons before he acts on stuff. A drug dealer near Tampa Bay, Florida, got arrested on Friday after calling the cops to report a customer for stealing $10. Now, his name is Eric Thomas, and he's 33. When cops got there, he walked up to them holding 11 small bags of pot, which is still illegal in Florida. Only medical marijuana is allowed. Now, according to the arrest report, he freely admitted he was selling weed, said someone ran off with 10 bucks, and they arrested him on the spot. Now, they searched his wallet and also found two small bags of cocaine, so he's facing charges for that too. But somehow, this isn't even the dumbest thing he's done recently. Just last month, he had to appear in court on separate charges and got arrested when he brought drugs into the courthouse. he was emptying out his pockets to go through a metal detector and pulled out 7 Ziploc bags of marijuana. Well, our next guest, 70-year career he's had in the music business, our good friend, Pat Boone. It is always good to talk to you. It's been a little while.
Yeah, it has. I tell you, my life is a blur today. It's like I'm on a speeding train and saying hi to people I've talked to before, and I wave as I go by.
Well, that's a good thing, right?
Well, I guess I don't feel like I'm enjoying each moment as much as I could because I'm rushing to the next one.
Right. I love the new single. Love what you guys did with that one.
Boy, thank you. So do I. I mean, the irony is I've got 2 hit records. Well, actually, the album and then 2 hit singles, and nobody's buying records.
Right, right.
I mean, all of a sudden, after all these many years, I've got some hit records, and nobody's buying records. They might want to go on social media, and I might get a fraction of a penny every time they stream. The Crystal Gale thing is, I forget what the current number, but I think it's over 300,000
wow.
streams and growing daily. And then Grits is on every country station in America. Mm-hmm. And you'd think you'd be selling a lot of records, but who's buying records?
Right.
And so it's the weirdness of it all.
And how hard is that to get adjusted to the way the market, the way the listening audiences listen to music now? How odd is it, and how hard is it for you to kind of get your mind around it, if you will?
Well, I'm not adjusted to it. You know, after this is my, as somebody pointed out, my 70th year of recording, starting in 1950. Well, it was in Nashville before 1955.
Mm-hmm.
So all this time, you know, there's some sort of instant gratification when people like your song and they buy the record and you feel like, wow, it's a good thing I did and I'm so happy about it.
This album is goes complete full circle for you. And I wanted to give you kind of a chance to talk about your history in Nashville and what it's like now, 70 years later, to come back and put out this country jubilee, if you will.
I was there in Nashville, Music City, USA.
Right.
But so we moved to Denton, Texas, right after we got married, and I was already preaching in a little country church, a little one-room church out in a wheat field in outside Slidell, Texas, when I got a call from Randy Wood of Dot Records in Gallatin, Tennessee, seeing me on the Ted Mack Amateur Hour, winning that 3 times nationally, and the Arthur Godfrey Talent Scout Show, and no offers of anything coming from it, so I was now resigned to being a teacher.
Mm.
And I get this phone call, and he says, "You want to make a record?" from Randy, and I said, "Well, sure." So he sent a ticket, and I went to Chicago and recorded a rhythm and blues song by the Charms on the Dutone label.
Yep.
And it was "One Heart's Not Enough, Baby. 2 hearts will make you feel crazy. 1 kiss will make you feel so nice. 2 kisses take you to paradise. This is Make One Love." And that thing went, not to number one, but top 10, sold 1 million records, the first crack out of the box. And then in May of that year, that was March of 55, but in May I had to do a second record, and it was Fats Domino's Ain't That a Shame. Suddenly, it was a million seller, and suddenly I was not a guy on his way to being a teacher preacher. I was a teen idol. And singing rock and roll, not country. That's the way that all happened, and it's been a blur ever since.
Did you always know that, or did you always have these in the background waiting for just the right time, Pat?
No, I was recording them. All these songs, you mean in the album?
Yeah, the ones on the new album.
The Jubilee album, no, I was recording them all through the years on my albums. We didn't have to create anything new for this album. All we had to do was put together all the songs like Hank Williams' Kalijah, Your Cheating Heart, and Make the World Go Away, Eddie Arnold, and Alabama Cowboy, Copas, and all of these great country songs, Wolverton Mountain, and just all of these great songs I was recording on my albums. They were considered pop albums, but I was doing country, and there were even a couple of flat-out country albums that I recorded during those years in between the rock and roll, eventually the heavy metal, gospel, all the other songs. And as it turns out, looking back now and tabulating, I became the most recorded single artist in history.
Wow.
Frank Sinatra recorded 1,500 songs, all classics. Bing Crosby, my role model in those early days, some 2,000.
Wow.
2,600 and three this last year. With the Country Jubilee was add Crystal Gayle and my new version of the Grammy-winning song she did with Eddie Rabbit, Just You and I, and my new hit song, Grits, put those into the album as Just You and I was already a million seller, but with Eddie Rabbit and into it, because the album is my version of all these huge hit songs. It is a compilation of some of the most beloved country songs of all time, and I happen to have been recording them all my 70-year career, and some of the best singing I ever did with great arrangements and great exuberance and joy. So it's the best of me, and I think the best of country songs.
And for you, at the fine young age of 89, what is the trick to keeping the voice as good and as healthy as you've been able to do it for so long?
Well, I have lived a very healthy life. my wife Shirley and I and the kids, we moved to California, from actually by way of Teaneck, New Jersey, briefly. But I said, honey, we're going to live by Tennessee standards out here. And she said, what does that mean? We're going to go to be in church Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday nights for prayer meeting. And we're going to just live like we would have lived in Nashville. And we're not going to kowtow or surrender to the mores of already at that time of Beverly Hills and Hollywood. My girls went to school with the kids of famous people, and their daughters were allowed to start dating in their early teens, the older guys. Not my daughters. My girls knew way in advance that they were not going to have any single dates with anybody before they were 16. Well, when I told them that and they were 9 or 10, it didn't matter. But when they got to be 15 and their friends were allowed to go out on weekends, I mean, they're same age, but go out on weekends with guys, or even in some cases, believe it or not, let the guy come spend the weekend at their house upstairs, and said, well, it's better to do that than having them in a motel somewhere or in the back seat of a car. So, I mean, this is the mores that we grew up in out here in Hollywood. And my daughters did not succumb to any of that because they were home after school, and they were home every night, and there was no single dating until they were 16. And my reasoning was, here in California in Beverly Hills, if you go out when you're 15, then the guy's got to be old enough to drive because he's not going to come pick you up on the bus. His mama bringing him over to pick you up. No. It's going to be a guy old enough to drive and probably not mature enough to drive. Than their friends' parents. But it was for their good and protection, and basically they understood it. And so we stuck to it. Not one of my daughters ever lived away from home until she was married, never had her own apartment. And a couple of them had their own cars, when they were 18, but still living at home. And going to school at Pepperdine out here, Christian College.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the way we lived.
Now, tell us about the single Grits and getting the group together to put this one, all the pieces and everything together. What was that like? And you talked about how the reception has been. How proud of that are you as well, being a brand new project?
Pretty proud, and especially since now I'm being received and accepted as a genuine country artist. I always was. But, you know, when my early career took off and I was, a teen idol singing rock and roll, Ain't That a Shame and Tutti Frutti and Rip It Up and, all these rock and roll songs, and then movie themes and then big band swing and big orchestras and, a plethora of all kinds of music. The fact that I was a country boy and recording country songs and living a really good country life. I was eating grits way back, way back when it came to California, when I don't think people in California knew what grits was. the records were already made. I was recording those songs. When we put the album together, all we had to do in addition was the two new songs, Grits and Just You and I. They were fresh. But, I had a couple of country hits along the way. Moody River, which went to number one almost faster than. But some of my pop records were also country hits. But I was not considered a country artist. So when we put the album together, all we did was get out all of these earlier albums and take out the country songs that I had put my heart and soul into and my best singing ever. The young Pat Boone was singing most of those songs, and the older Pat Boone doing okay with the latter ones as well, including two new hits.
Right.
It was it was assembling and in some cases re-editing, for modern sounds. And I went way back to Kalijah and You're Cheating Heart and Tennessee Waltz. I think my version of Tennessee Waltz is the best record of it ever. And why not? I'm a Tennessee boy. And I recorded it while I was doing all the other rock and roll songs, but I was in my albums of even big band swing and pop songs, I would always add two or three of my favorite country songs. So I was assembling this album all along the way.
That is good stuff. Now, Pat, I always want to make sure, and the website, is that still the best place to keep up with everything that you got, the albums and so many other things as well?
So patboone.com. We keep finding the ways to try to catch up with tech. I'm answering questions now on patboone.com. People write me questions all the time, and I'm answering them. And sometimes they're funny answers if I can make them funny. Book, of course, and I get, is it not Snapchat, but what's the other thing that people try to contact me all the time?
Is it TikTok? Instagram, there you go.
Instagram and Twitter. I'm only one guy, and I do have an excellent tech guy in my office. So I try to stay up in all those things. But I'm only one guy, and I find myself just constantly behind the eight ball time-wise, trying to keep up with all the ways that people want to contact me. But I'm trying.
That's right. That's right. Well, Pat, it is always such a privilege to visit with you, sir. I appreciate you carving some time out to be on the show today, and I look forward to our next visit, my friend.
And with still other record projects to come, by the way, I've got a record on the shelf I can't even tell you about that I have just recorded after Just You and I and after Grits run their course. Something I think is going to be another major country hit. And we'll just keep it going, but just plodding along and keeping up with the times and looking into the future.
Can you imagine being this hammered? Police in Simi Valley, California responded to a suspicious incident where someone rang someone's doorbell and then hid in the bushes. When officers arrived, they heard gunshots and saw someone crawling in the foliage. They grabbed the guy and found out he was a 63-year-old man named Gary Leskowski who lived nearby. He told the cops there were intruders in his home and he'd exchanged gunfire with them. But it turns out Gary was just super drunk. There were no intruders, but the police did see evidence that Gary had fired many rounds inside and outside his house when he was apparently shooting at phantom intruders. Now, fortunately, no one was hurt. Gary got charged with gross negligence discharge of a firearm. I do want to say thanks again for joining us for this episode of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. If you ever have a comment, a question, anything else you'd like to know, you can leave feedback here. You can also hit me up on the socials, Instagram, X, formerly Twitter, TikTok, and Facebook. Look me up at The Cameron Dole. And you can also find me on YouTube at Cameron Dole as well. If you have a special guest idea, email me, gqwithcam@gmail.com. Well, our good friend Brandon Allen came up with this theme for us when we got underway. We're going to let him play us out. I hope you guys have a great rest of your week.